We are happy to host the world's largest value-added aluminium producer, Hindalco, which after being successfully deleveraging its balance sheet, turns its focus on growth. The company is represented by Mr. Subir Sen, Head of Investor Relations. Now, I would request Subir to give his opening remark where he can highlight his present growth plans, which they have announced. And then we can open the floor for Q&A. Over to you, Subir.
Thanks, Ashish, for the brief introduction. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you guys are all safe and sound. So I think you must have gone through our latest investor presentation, which covers, this was Investor Day, which we did on 30th of March. So we just came out with our, growth plans over the next 5 years, including Novelis and India. So I hope you must have seen the presentation and the live event, which we did on 30th. So just for a just a refresher, what we actually discussed in this forum. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, so in this forum, we basically called out our overall plans in India as well as in Novelis. And also we gave some market overview on the Novelis side, on the different segments, including our four major segments, that is beverage cans, automotive, specialties, and aerospace. So if you must have noticed that now the beverage cans is growing at a CAGR of 3 to 4%. And so is automotive, which is, say, growing at a CAGR of 11%. And specialties, again, it's a new sector which we, say, ventured into after acquisition of Aleris. That is the building and construction and the, say, thick gauge and light gauge segment. So that business is also picking up as the house bills and all, say, picking up in US. So that business is also doing pretty well. And so as the overall markets. Demand from these segments. On the aerospace side, again, as the travel is resuming after now we are getting back to normal, this market is also getting back to its it was how it was. So we hope this segment also does pick up. And I think you can expect in the next, 3 to 4 quarters, this this market will again come back to. This is not a very big market again. This is around 400 KT odd market, where we supply around 80 to 100 KT from the. Again, we got this segment as an addition from the acquisition of Aleris. Going forward, we have covered our. Overall transformational journey across Novelis, how we have announced our organic projects and have we have achieved this growth over the period of last decade and some from in FY10 to FY16 we have called out our capital expenditures that have grown and then been this is how the transformational journey has begun and where we are now today, delivering an EBITDA of 1.5 million tons, million. So coming to India, India's journey again, we are focused on downstream. We are expanding our downstream. Downstream is the overall focus for the company. Upstream, again, we are, doing small brownfield expansions and on the alumina and the aluminium side. So we have, called out certain details on that. This market, the downstream market is quite strong in India. The consumption of aluminium in India is around 4 million tons. And this is expected to go up to, 8 million tons. Let me just, share the screen. I think it would be easier. Can you see my screen, Ashish?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah. So this was the slide which we presented for the overall aluminium market. on the end use side. So this you can see building and construction, transportation, packaging, and others. So these are all growing at a CAGR of around 7 to 10%. So the consumption of aluminium is going up. So you just see that in the next decade, it is expected to grow around 8 million tons. Same for the other segments like copper. So these are some end-use segments, and this sector is also expected to grow between, say, taking all the segments, say, between 10, 6 to 12%. We are getting into newer spaces like the IGTs, which is your inner groove tubes. So this is basically used in the AC, the AC outdoor and indoor unit. These are the groove pipes, which is being used for refrigeration. So this is particularly a sector which is totally dependent on imports. So we are trying to get into this market and capture this opportunity. This is a project which is also being approved under the PLI scheme. So this is the way forward from, say, rods, which we are doing currently, to copper inner groove tubes. Apart from that, there are uses of copper across all these end use. So we are focusing there as well. So this is the overall market segments in the copper space. Same for alumina. So this is the specialty alumina, which is basically used in these end use segments like ceramics, flame retardants, refractories, electronics, the solid surfaces. Electronics, basically your automotive and the medical and the aerospace. This acts as a all the Gorilla glasses you see, it's all made out of specialty alumina hydrate. We've also given some guidance on how do we plan to go ahead in India. As I said, these are some recent inorganic expansions or inorganic acquisitions we did. So this is a Ryker copper CCR facility of around 225 KT, a Sapa extrusions facility. This is a Hydro's facility in India. This is in Kupam. This was around 15 KT. So these are the plans of the upstream and the downstream. So this is upstream, we are, say, planned to spend around 1.7 billion on downstream, around 719 million going forward. On the copper business and also specialty alumina and energy. Energy is basically, these are the two mines we have got, and this will come in next, say, 3 to 4 years. This will again give sort of assurance of supplies. As now we are dependent on Coal India. So this will basically gives us an assurance of we are having our own mine. So if you can say our requirements is around 12, our requirement is around 16 million tons. And this two mines together would make up more than 16 million tons. So we will be completely secured. So dependency on the linkage coal from Coal India as well as e-auction will reduce. So that's the plan. But this will take at least 3 to 4 years to get all the clearances done and getting the mine up and running. This was the overall, if you take all the expansions in place. So this is some projected numbers we have shown from the current capacity and how the capacity will look like after, say, adding up all the VAP and the expansions on the smelting side, which is a 50 KT brownfield and a 180 KT, another brownfield we are looking at. Same for copper VAP, we are at 540. And if you add that IGT and alloy rods of 25 KT we discussed, it gives us 565. And this is 5421. This is the cathode capacity. This includes the recycling, which we have discussed. So on the alumina side, as I said, there are two projects in the pipeline. As one is greenfield and one is brownfield. If you add that, we are currently around 3.6 million tons. We will grow up to nearly 5 million tons after these two projects come up. And this is on the specialty alumina. So currently we are at 361. We'll go up to nearly 700. So this was all on the project side. I think I would not say go slide by slide on the ESG side. You must have, say, seen all the slides. So we are doing a lot of things on the ESG side. This is the deleveraging path we have shown for Novelis India as well as Consol. So on a consolidated basis, we are currently at 1.62 at the end of last quarter. This is expected to further improve, say, by the year end and in Q4. This was a broad capital allocation, which we discussed, that 75% will be, say, directed towards free cash flows, directed towards growth capex. As you've seen, we will be investing around $8 billion over the next 5 years, 15% of the overall net debt reduction, and 8 to 10% as per our policy, we'll keep it for shareholder returns. I think this was a short refresher, and we can now take on questions.
Yeah, thanks, Subir. Thanks for this presentation. Yeah, we are open for question and answer round. Please feel free if anybody has any question. Okay, to set the motion, I'll ask one question, Zubir. The growth plan which we have discussed, obviously there are lots of, in Novelis especially, mm-hmm. and we look at the our greenfield project at mm-hmm. North America, mm-hmm. where we are investing around $2.5 billion,
right.
capacity of around 600 KT.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of returns we are expecting over there? I mean, ROC at peak capacity also.
See, a threshold number, as you know, it is well above that number, which we have already been talking about. That is, say, around 15% IRR, which we talk about. For any project has to, say, reach that number before it gets any further green signal. So that is the threshold, and that is, I think, within that. And I would like to also highlight that this particular project has been worked out on based on the newer contracts we have discussed with the end customers of ours, including Ball, Arda, InBev, all these people. Because as you know, there's a shortage of cans across. So the demand of cans is increasing day by day. And there was a pressure on us again to put up some capacities, because the current capacities is all full. And again, we don't want to again put up capacities at the current prices. We obviously want a sort of a better pricing on what we are today. So this contracts. So what we have done, this particular 2.5 billion project, we already say contracted nearly 50% of that, and this is at a higher price, far better pricing than what it is currently. So that again gives a edge, and also all newer contracts which will be coming for renewable from say now on will be, say, recontracted at this agreed price. So I cannot share any sort of a number with you as of now. And the other thing is, like, this plant will be highly automated. For a downstream segment, the major components include the labor as well. So this plant, again, being in highly automated, will require less of labor for running this. So again, you will save on the fixed cost that side. Plus, it will be highly automated. The efficiencies will be better. And this plant is also, say, fungible. You must have noticed that this is, like, you can also, say, switch from can to autos if needed. And this will also be accompanied by the recycling along with it. So because if you're going for a can expansion, you have to have a recycling, because only a standalone can rolling would not, say, be a viable option, because in cans, recycling spreads, of course, helps a lot. So that's the overall plan on this 2.5 billion.
Sure. So is it safe to assume mm-hmm. that because normally we guide out $500 sustainable EBITDA per ton.
Mm-hmm.
So this plant, whatever number which will come, But definitely it will be much higher than what we are having as a sustainable EBITDA per ton. Because why I'm asking is that on $2.5 billion, if you do the reverse calculation, even at $600, you know, you will end up with around $360 million, which is not even 8-9% of overall investment on a per year basis. So
As I indicated that this is definitely at a better pricing from the current levels. So definitely that will have a better impact going forward. I cannot give any sort of a number as of now because we don't disclose all those EBITDA per ton on a product-wise basis. So it will be difficult for me to say call out any number. But on comparatively basis, yes, it will be. It is negotiated far better than what it is. So once this project is online, and once our existing newer contracts gets into place on the existing capacities, you will see the difference, and then you can obviously we can talk about it at that point of time.
And when can we expect the new contract for the existing capacities?
So
these
contracts are basically 3 to 5 years. So whatever is coming for renewal, so it's a continuous process.
Yeah.
So as and when I think this will come, you will be able to gauge that when that hits it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hi. I have a question. Can I go ahead, please?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, I need to ask on Sorin on the macro front, like, you know, in Europe, how much production can be hit due to the higher gas prices? Mm-hmm. And are we seeing any further cut post the Russia-Ukraine conflict?
See, if you ask about our existing operations of Novelis in Europe, so I think our operations are going fine. So nothing has been impacted as of now. But on the energy side, yes, we are impacted. On the contracts, as a policy, we have, we have contracted the energy part of it. So around 75% is already contracted. So on the 25%, we are getting a hit. I think for the next quarter, we already talked about that, that you guys can, for an indication, I think we have, given out around 30-35 million impact in the coming quarter. So that includes not only energy, but also inflationary supply chain impact. So all taken together, I think it is around 65 million impact in Q4. So, but this going forward, I think situation is expected to improve. But as of now, there's no impact on the operations as such. But yes, the costs have gone up in Europe.
Sure. Thanks, Imani. Harsh, you can go ahead with your question.
Sir, I would like to understand one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for our CAPEX, what mm-hmm. kind of debt would we need to raise, or our EBITDA is okay for to fund the coming CAPEX?
Yeah. So if you have listened to our management during this investor day show, so we have said that there won't be any debt being taken to fund these capexes, nor in India. Same for Novelis. So we'll be funding all these projects through our internal accruals. So that's the plan.
Okay. And so what percent of our aluminium volumes has been hedged for FY23?
23. We are hedged at around, if you ask me now, 23, we are around 18%. Just give me a sec. Yeah, 23. We are hedged around. 23. We are hedged around 30%.
At what price?
At nearly about 2,500.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thanks, Harsh. Satin, please go ahead with
your. I was just going to ask, are you going to hedge any more given aluminium is now roughly $1,000 higher? Give or take a bit.
So this is, I've given you the average. So we have been, say, doing it at the levels, good levels we are getting, because I think the LME touched at one point of time around nearly around 4,000 as well. So we have been continuously monitoring it. And so this is the average of which the number which I've given you.
Average is 2,500, right?
Yes. So that includes all the, includes some recent levels as well.
Okay. Is the maximum that you will hedge over the course of a year?
See, as a policy, what we do is we have some core hedges and we have some view-based hedging. So the maximum we have done is up to, say, around 40 to 50%. So I think of that, say 20, 25%, we do core hedging. Core hedging is nothing, but hedge based on some the threshold EBITDA which you want to protect, and view based is basically you take your views whether the LME is going up, going down. You just take views on that, and then you basically go for further hedging. So the core hedging is like an insurance. It's like you have taken that hedge at this particular LME. So this is like an insurance which we do. So that is around 20-25%, and remaining is view based.
Okay, great. And the alumina capacity that you are setting up will start to come in from when?
See, the debottlenecking would not take much time. So that 350 KT project will come sooner. So we have given timelines as well. So if you see that slide, for that debottlenecking, I think we have given 24, that is next year. And for the greenfield expansion, it will take time because it's a greenfield again. So this is FY26.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Satyan.
Yeah,
Kunal, please go ahead.
Yeah, sir, taking ahead on this hedging policy, you mentioned around 23% has been hedged till now.
You're talking about which year? 22 or 23?
23, I said 30%. 30% you have hedged. Yeah. So, and it is around $2,500, right?
Yes.
So, like, what is your view on the aluminum pricing? That do you see that there is a not much price may go up from here, and you should like hedge the balancing 20%, or you see that the prices will remain at an elevated level and can hedge in bits and parts? What is your view overall on this?
See, hedging just doesn't go with where the LME is. You have to see whether the market is in contango or it's in backwardation. So you have to get those levels as well. So so as I said, this number is basically is an average. So we have been, say, hedging for 23 since last year, right? So we have got some good levels this year for 23. So we have taken that advantage. So, say we recently have done some small amount, which was, say, above, 3,500 even. So, as and when we are getting an opportunity, so we are trying to do that. So, this is an average what we have given the number for 23. So, that includes we have taken some positions when the LME was at a higher level, and the market was, not in a backwardation, it is in contango. So then only you can hedge, right? Your spot, your futures has to be higher than your spot. If it is the other way around, you cannot.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
One more thing, when you're talking about in fourth quarter, mm-hmm. where you have the management has earlier said a hit of around $65-70 million. So the entire $65-70 million is cash a hit, or a part of it's an opportunity hit? Because in last quarters also, we mentioned that, you know, around $25 million is hit because of auto contracts or because of auto volumes. So, you know, just to get clarification on that, whether this 65-70 is including that auto thing or
it is over and above. See, Q3 also had that impact. No? If you see the Q3, the semiconductor impact is continuing, right, since it has started.
Yeah.
So the range of 20-25 million is being said on the calls. So the last year EBITDA you see is including that impact.
Okay.
So as and when that situation gets better, which we expect in the, say, second half of the next year, so that will again get settled. But this, what I think Dave has spoken about, this includes your inflationary pressure, supply chain disruptions, this high energy prices. This includes all that. So most of it is, again, a sort of a headwind that has come up. So I think this is for basically Q4. And we expect this to basically settle down in coming quarters.
So just to clarify, this $65-70 million is not beyond Q3, because in Q3 also $25 million was included.
Yes, that is already there in Q3.
Sure. And the kind of scrap spread benefits which we are seeing, do you think that that is more than enough to offset this cost headwinds?
See, spreads have been good in Q3 as well, and so is continued to be in Q4. So spreads again is a function of how LME and the premiums are moving, in which direction. So again, it would have a positive impact, but again, would not be enough to offset this particular impact in this quarter. Maybe going forward, the spreads improve further. Because if you see, the spreads as a percentage has remained there. But it is the quantum, which is again dependent on how the premiums are. So premiums have gone up. So the quantum again gets impacted. If it goes down, it again gets corrected. If it goes up, like the LME was, say, trading at, say, 3,500 now. If it has been, say, gone down to 300, they say 3,000, then spreads would have, say, again, on a quantum, may have come down.
Yeah.
So, because it is basically nothing but the discount on your base metal price.
Mm-hmm.
So even the percentage discount remains the same. If your base goes up and down, so that has an impact.
Sure. I think then fourth quarter, when we look at LME scrap and LME aluminium price, the average of that spread has increased by something like $100 per day.
Yes, and that is and that also has an impact on your 60% of the business, because spreads are again mostly connected to the scrap, and scrap is mostly used in the can business. So 80-85% scrap is used in the can business.
Okay.
Autos is very less, say 10-15%, and another, I think, 10-15% on the specialties, which is your BNC business in North America. So most of it is in cans. So you see, whatever spreads are moving has an impact on the 60% of the business.
Sure.
Not on all.
And in addition to that, the kind of margins which we are making in South American business, because, you know, most of them is beverage cans.
Yeah.
So are we expecting similar kind or marginally lower kind of margins in our new beverage can facility, in that range, or it will be substantially differentiated from what we are making right now in South America?
You're talking about going forward, getting better pricing?
So what I was asking is that, in South America, because of, I think 95 or 100% of our volume is for beverage can.
Yeah.
So my question was, the kind of EBITDA per ton or margins which we are making over there, are we seeing similar kind of margins we can make in North America new field capacity, or will be lower than or higher than that, because it's more of automated and all?
So you come from here or there, so we would not say give any sort of a number there, but again, South America is a different market altogether, and we have that again early mover advantage. So that and also, so what happens if, when the supply and the demand is balanced, which is happening in North in South America. So there's no one who can say come in that vicinity. So you should be able to meet up the demand. If the demand goes up in that region and there's no supply, again, there is a chance of say someone coming in, and then there's a pricing war that starts. So I think in South America, we have that advantage. And there is also a duty which has been put up. So again, you have that duty protection. So the other guy cannot import and say sell. So that is not a viable option. So I think we have that advantage in South America, and that continues to be. If you've seen the trend, so I think South America has been positive and a very good contributor on the can space. But yes, we are trying to get better contracts on all other regions, including Asia and North America. And as I said, these newer contracts, including for the new project and the contracts which we are, say, signing with the same customer, are again signed at a better pricing. So that will definitely have an impact going forward.
Sure. Thanks. Sharing, you can please go ahead with your question.
Thanks, Ashish. Hi, Subir.
Hi, Shorin.
Subir, just want to clarify on the cost part. I guess we have guided for a 9 to 10% increase in cost in Q4.
Right.
Mainly because of increase in coal prices. If I understand, Q3, our coal sourcing mix was around 60% linkages, some 20-25% of e-auction, 5% imports and 10% captive. Am I right?
Yes.
So if you look at it, I guess linkage and captive cost won't be impacted much, but e-auction and import cost would see an increase in prices.
Yeah.
So could you just tell us, is there any change in mix in Q4, and what would be the mix going ahead? And more on how this captive mix of 10% could see in next 2-3 years down the line?
See, so normally what happens, as you know, our requirement is around 16 million tons of coal, where we have linkages with Coal India of around 12 million tons. So we get up to 75% of that. So so our priority is getting linkage as much as possible. Then there is an option of, say, going for e-auction, own mines or imports. So imports is the last option we have, because, as you know, import prices are have shot up like anything. So it is now mainly between e-auction and own mines. So e-auction, again, prices, as you rightly said, has gone up. So again, so this mix particularly remains more of linkage coal. So this was 60% last quarter. I think this quarter it will be, more than what it was. E-auction, again, was around 26% Q3. E-auction and own mines. So I think own mines would be lesser this time, and we have e-auctions more. Again, that also has an impact on the overall pricing, overall cost escalation, which we have guided, say, 10%, 9.5-10%. So that includes the higher e-auction prices for this quarter. So this is how it is. And in a normal circumstance, it is more of linkage. So linkage coal, normally, as I said, we get up to 75% of the 12 million tons, which is 8.5 to 9 million tons of our 16 million tons requirement. So okay. you can
do the math. So are we not able to ramp up our captive coal requirement?
So captive is again at a higher cost. So okay. Captive is again after the e-auction. So if the e-auction prices go above our captive, then of course we can do our own mines. But on a GCV terms, our own mines are far better. Then you have to say factor in that as well. So that is how we plan.
Okay. And one technical question, Subir. What is our fuel cost consumption in aluminium? Like per ton requirement?
I don't have the number in back of my mind, but now what we are doing, we are, say, converting our baking furnaces, which is basically where the furnace oil is being used. We are converting those to natural gas.
Okay.
So I think three of the smelters have already done that. The fourth one is on the pipeline. So I think sooner we'll be able to cover most of the baking furnaces converted to natural gas. So I think the furnace oil consumption will go further down.
Okay. Thanks, Uwe. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Chirag, you can please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Suvi.
Hi.
So just want to understand that, as you said, that because of the energy price inflation in Europe, your operations are still not impacted. You are continuing with normal operations. So till what level of energy price inflation can you still continue to sustain operations, and when will you be forced to, curtail the operations?
See, as I said, my 75% of the energy cost is contracted. So that much I am protected. It is only the pressure of the remaining 25%, which has, say, gone pretty high, or maybe since of this current geopolitical tension and situation, what is currently going on. So I think, say, closing down a plant for this, I think I cannot give you any sort of a indication on that, but things are in control. And energy cost, as I said, is not as a factor in a downstream as compared to an upstream business, where, say, energy cost is, say, around 40 to 45%, whereas in downstream it is lower than that, far lower than that. The major cost for a downstream business is the manpower, so that way you can take.
Okay, and as you said that for the capex of the $8 billion capex which you announced over the next 5 years, you won't be requiring any debt, and it will be mainly funded through internal accruals.
Yeah.
So this is based on what LME price assumption?
So we have not drafted our plans based on LME, because LME nobody can guess. So we can obviously think about a base dollar per ton of EBITDA, which we have achieved not now, but on an average of last 20 years. So we have worked based on that, not because LME, again, you cannot predict the LME. So that is worked out on that. So based on the realistic assumptions, and based on the because again, downstream business is more of a sort of a consistent or a sort of a more predictable one. So we expect that the on an average we'll be able to generate at least $2 billion of net free cash flows after working capital. This is how we are confident that we'll be able to fund the requirements of this capex which we have talked about, which is spread over next 5 years.
So any risk you foresee on these assumptions?
See, risk in the sense, if there's something that happens, like if there is some situation which we have faced, say, 2 years back, then again, that is something which is very special, or some sort of supply chain or something disruption happens, and well, that is beyond our control. So again, on a current basis, I think we'll be. This is very sort of a normalized the way we have built in our model. There's nothing bullish sort of a situation which we have basically built in to say a plan for this capex over the next 5 years.
And if I understand correctly, you currently do 60% of the recycling in the can segment. So
60% is overall. 60% is overall on the Novelis side. Of the 60%, 80% is for cans.
So any plans to further increase these levels of recycling?
Yeah, we are going. If you see, I'll just put up this slide for reference. So we have given the guidance how our rolling capacities will go. And so as our recycling capabilities. Let me just put up this one for reference. Yeah. Can you see the slide?
Yeah.
So this is how we will evolve. So this is our current capacity, 3.9, as in this Pinda in China. Pinda is already online. So we'll reach, at first stage, we will reach 4.5. This, you remember, we gave it in our last year's Investors Day. And after all this Greenfield US and other expansion projects you've spoken about, our rolling capacity will reach 5.8. So Same for recycling, we are, say, doing around 2.5 million tons. This is how all the recycling capabilities we will be building across as and when we expand our rolling capacity. So this will reach up to 3.9.
Okay. And in your overall CapEx plans, do you only also foresee any CapEx for, you know, going towards green aluminum production? And if so, then do you also expect any kind of premium to be fetched in, if we go for green aluminum?
So green aluminum, you mean the smelting?
Low carbon emission, yeah.
Yeah. So, see, green aluminum is just a marketing thing. So a client is not, say, giving any sort of premium of whether it is a green aluminum or a brown aluminum. So currently, it is only a marketing tactics, what I can say. So again, you cannot compare only one part of it as green aluminum, where you're just doing your smelting part with some hydel power or something, which is, say, so a company like Norsk Hydro, so they are doing the smelting part based on hydel power, not say from last year or so. They have been doing it for last 50 years. So it is nothing new, right? So they are now marketing it as, say, as a green aluminium. So a customer is not, say, paying you any premium for green. It is, again, you have to take in right from the complete value chain, right? From the bauxite till the end, say, value added. What are you doing on the overall thing? Like, what are you doing with your bauxite residue? Mm-hmm. So as if you talk about Hindalco, you must have seen our slides that we talk about the recycling of the bauxite residue. We are sending it to the cement industry. We are not just dumping it into the ponds. Same for fly ash. We are reusing again, recycling it and say giving it to the cement industry again. We are doing mines backfilling with the bauxite residue. So if I take you to this slide, I think that will make you more clear. So you have to see on an overall basis. So our bauxite residue recycling, if you see, has gone up to 100% last year and will be more than 100% by the end of this year. Same for fly ash recycling, if you see a YTD number, which is beyond 100%. So this is end to end. So again, recycling going forward in the downstream segment, how much recycling you're doing. So we are doing in the Novelis segment 60% recycling. So end-to-end, we are focused on the overall value chain, not only the smelting part where you're just, say, using an hydel power and making the ingots and saying we are green and now you give us the premium for it.
So when you go, say, you're going above 100%, what does that mean?
So we are, say utilizing more of your waste than you are generating. So again, like you have, it's not like it doesn't go like what you generate and what you say recycle. So you have some older material lying. So we are just getting rid of that as well. So we are not just keeping it there. We are trying to get rid of our earlier backlog as well. So that is how it is more than.
So are you committing any specific capex for reducing carbon emissions or any other kind of emissions from your operations?
So our maintenance capex, which is say around 200 million in India, that includes the these capex which we are doing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chirag. So we have two more questions. One is the capex guidance of around $8 billion for next 5 years. Mm-hmm. How we are planning to step it up? Like FY 2023-24 will be much lower, and then maybe 25.
See, yeah, initially it will be lower. So 23, you can say, won't be the peak. Say 24-25 can be higher than the 23 levels. So I think for modeling it, you can say take that 8 billion spread over next 5 years. So that way, so it might go up and down. I think 24-25 will have more, and all depends on the cash flows you generate. Like if you don't have enough cash flows to fund your capex at that point of time, you of course has an option to particularly little delay the project, since you are not able, say in case the LME falls or something, you're not able to have that much of cash flows. So so that way we have we're planning it to do.
Okay. Yeah, Kunal, please go ahead.
Yeah. In the copper segment, we recently acquired the Ryker business. So historically, we have not not been stable with the volumes and margins in the copper business. So going forward, after this acquisition, how we can see on the volumes and the stability on the margins? Can you just beef up the business a bit, change the what we additionally we can gain after this acquisition?
Yeah, sure. Good question. So as you know, there was a instability in the smelting part of the business because of, again, some instability in the operations and all that. I think that more or less has been now resolved. So you must have noticed that last quarter and say Q2 and Q3 are more or less say a balanced quarter. And we foresee this to sustain in the coming quarters as well on the smelting side. On the downstream part of it, which is your CCR, in the current Hindalco setup, things are pretty good. If you've noticed that a CCR facility was didn't had any sort of a shutdown or something, we always being able to supply to the market as per the demand. Because, as you know, all this CCR is being sold domestically. And whatever cathodes we sell is exported. So if you say we are, say, making, say, 400 KT of cathodes every year, and we are making, say, 420 KT of CCR, then this CCR is all sold domestically. Say 380 KT of CCR, then this 380 KT is all sold domestically. The 20 KT, if you see the difference, is what is exported, because there's no market for cathodes in India. So if you so what happens in the Ryker, if you see our existing capacity, including Ryker, has reached 540 KT for CCR, and we have smelting capacity of only 420. So this difference, so how do we make up for that difference, is like we'll import the cathodes and we'll roll the rods and sell. This is how it is. But on an operations basis, I think things are more or less stabilized, and you can actually model it the way it is now going forward. And market is quite strong. So again, you have to, on the downstream side, you have to align yourselves with the market. So you cannot just produce more. So as a policy also, we don't make for the stock. We always say it is all made to order. So we don't keep inventories lying as an unsold inventory. So we always align with the market demand. So you must have noticed that our production and sales are mostly balanced.
So we will be importing 100 KT of around 100 KT of cathode from now onwards.
Yeah. So again, we have to align ourselves with the market, how much we are producing, say how much the market demand is, because again, as I said, CCR is all sold in domestic. So over and above our 420, 400 capacity in terms of smelting. So over and above whatever we need, we'll import.
Do you think it will be incremental to our existing margins, or how it will?
No, definitely not, because you are getting the imports. See, the beauty of smelting versus an import of cathodes lies in the TCRC which you get while you do the conversion. TCRC is nothing but the discount you get from the miners. The second is the byproducts you generate while you do the smelting. Byproducts, as in sulfuric acid. You add ammonia to it and a rock phosphate, you tend to get that diammonium phosphate, which is nothing but your urea. So these are the byproducts which you don't pay for it, right? You, when you're buying the concentrate from the miners, you pay for three things. One is your copper content, your gold and silver content. And all these byproducts which come in is like you get a extra benefit out of that. So that is basically smelting versus you import the cathodes. So if you're not smelting, then you have an option to import the cathodes, but you lose on these benefits.
Then is there an option or going for an increased cathode capacity for the balancing part, or we will seek
to
import?
We are, say, if you see this slide, so we have a plan to increase the capacity by another 100 KT through recycling. So that will also, but come, that will come in next couple of years or more, not immediately. So I just put this slide on. Yeah. So if you see here, this 421 going up to 521. This is nothing but the 100 KT recycling, which we spoken about, 100 KT here, which will come up in FY25. So once this is up and running, but this is again under appraisal, this will give another 100 KT on the cathode side. But still, there would be a gap. That gap will be filled in by the imports.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kunal. Subir, one more question was, of late we are hearing again that Coal India, they are trying to supply more coal to power sector.
Yeah.
So the way we have seen in October, November last year,
mm-hmm.
are we facing any kind such kind of situation now?
Yes, I think Coal India always has this situation during the summers and during the monsoons. So as a company, what we do is we plan our coal well in advance. So we make sure that we have enough coal so that our smelters don't have an issue. So normally we have created that infrastructure to keep that much of coal. And mostly it is what we faced last year as well. Again, there is more of a challenge of availability of rakes. So the other option is you get it through the road, which is again time consuming and a higher logistics because it again increases your cost. So I think that way we are planning as a backup. So when we are facing challenge of getting the rakes, so we are getting it through road. So that is the option we have. So again, we are able to maintain the threshold inventory across all our smelters as of now.
My question was actually on the linkage coal. E-auction coal, obviously, must be buying more. But linkage coal, are we getting the same percentage?
Yeah, whether it is linkage or e-auction, again, you have to get it through either rakes or...
Okay.
So... again, you have to prioritize based on that. So it doesn't, because supplier is same, right? You have to buying it from Coal India only. So we prioritize the linkage first, and e-auction is when you need more. When they are not able to supply via linkage, again, a linkage is a continuous thing, right? It is not when you need the coal, you order that time. So that is a continuous process that happens, because we have signed that contract. So we need 12 million ton of coal from Coal India every year. So that process goes on and on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lastly, is it possible to share what kind of incremental EBITDA per ton we make while selling value-added products, both in aluminium and copper? And with the kind of expansion in aluminium we are doing in value-added product, whether that delta will change more or it will remain more or less the same?
See, on the aluminium side, we are planning to, say, give you a sort of a number on EBITDA per ton basis from next year onwards. So let's see how we can do that. And then as of now, I cannot just give you any number. But yes, the things are quite good. We are generating good amount of EBITDA per ton in India downstream value added as well. So this is how it is now. And that's the reason we are completely focused on, say, expansion on the downstream to be completed by the timelines which we have, say, discussed and given it on the presentation and been discussing with you guys. On the copper side, value-added copper rods, I can just give you some indications like versus an export of cathode, when you sell it as a rod in India, you tend to say get around, say, nearly about $200 premium over export of cathodes. And you reduce the conversion cost, and that you get that EBITDA directly to your earnings.
Okay, so conversion cost should be more than $50, maybe.
Yeah, rod to sorry, so cathode to rods. I think the conversion cost is somewhere around, say, maybe around $80-$90 per ton.
Okay. So incremental $100-$120 per ton we are making on?
Yeah. Versus the export of cathodes. Because if you're not converting to rods, you have an option to export cathode.
Very good. Yeah. So do we have any further questions from any of our? I think there are no further questions, Abir. So we'll take this to the end. Sure. So thank you so much, Subir, for your time. And I think you have patiently answered all the questions as well as reiterated your growth plans for the company. Wish you all the best. And thank you so much once again.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.